Just a quick point on page 11. We didn't quite get to that bottom of that page last time. And the reference to Romans 12:2. And the question is it wise to understand the teaching of other religions? Yes, it is wise. But we should realize that when we study world religions or other religions, we'll be exposing ourselves to the errors of that religion, that world, and not to the inerrant word of God, which is good, acceptable, and perfect. Romans 12:2. Now, what's interesting on that, and I'd like to read that verse. Again, all this was in the idea of testing and study. In Romans 12:2, the apostle says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is spiritual worship. But in verse 2, it says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Conform to the world. When we expose ourselves to error, to things that are different, we need to be aware. There are pulls and tugs and things that appeal to us. And I guess that's anywhere. But God, the other religions have that deeper faith, that deeper emotion attached to it. Sense of salvation. And when we conform to the world, is that good for us? No. But we still have to talk to others, don't we? So we have to make sure that we're grounded in our faith. So when we're conforming to the world, we need to be careful. There could be festivals. That one goes, this is a good festival. Especially if you're weak in your religion. Say, that's pretty nice. I like all that camaraderie there. I like the way they did their festival. So there's things to look at when you deal with other religions. Or other religions may have a great number associated with them. So, and they have programs and that sort of thing. So it's things to watch out for. And you'll be confronted with different views on different verses. I always thought that way about that verse or that section of that book. And so those are things we need to investigate, and that's exactly what it says, doesn't it? Okay? Renew your mind by testing, you may discern what the will of God is. So that's one opening verse to deal with that. Any question about that? I think we all have to be careful whatever we do in life, whatever associations we make. It's interesting. Pew Research does a lot of research on religion, and they just came out with a new study this week, and it talked about when you associate with people of other religions, you may have negative views about that religion on things you've heard, or, and of course that seems to translate to the person. But when you have them as a next door neighbor, or you work with someone of a different religion, you say, well, they're not that bad after all. Well, look at the kids, a good family structure. Look at their work ethic. I wonder if that's connected with their religion. Well, they say it is. Do you say your religion is connected to your work ethic? The way you make decisions. People know who you believe in, who you put your trust in, return to. So be aware of that conformity too, I guess. Okay? Not to mention you shouldn't be friends, but just be aware of that. And the same thing vice versa. Well, they can see you. They say, you know, the Muslim may say, well, you know, Christianity, interesting. I mean, that's a good person. I've always heard that they're, you know, this way or that way, or I've heard of Roman Catholic or whatever it is. Okay? But those are things to think about as we do associations with others, but don't be conformed to that world of religion. Any points on that or experience that you've had with that sort of thing? I found it good when I was working with association with a whole world of personalities and religions, that we had a camaraderie at work, that these people had good orthodoxies in family, some didn't. So I'm painting the brush with all of them. But when they looked at me, my effort was always to portray who I had my faith in, and I would tell them that. And it spurred some conversations, some good conversations. And so that's the example that we should. We don't be conformed to the world. Any thoughts?
Years ago, Doug, there was some fact I remember here. Took a trip to Europe, toured some of the Catholic cathedrals, and came back and said, "Why don't we have nice, stained windows like this?" So if a person not grounded in the faith, it can, the very point that you're making, be influenced by all of the world religion that they happen to see.
It's interesting you mentioned the great buildings in Europe and the long, long history. And that was one of my points I forgot about. You go up to the northeast part of the country, you can go to Europe, you can see the remnants, and they're using the buildings. They're great, great facilities. I go to Salt Lake City, they got some great, great buildings there. Or the more recent. But you say, wow, there's something to that. And for someone that's not grounded as they should be, okay, it can be an influence. And especially when you see the grandeur of the raiments they wear. And things like that, especially in the Orthodox Catholic Church. There's something to be said about a lot of gold and a lot of ceremony, pomp and ceremony. And it leads confidence, lends confidence to what's going on. And so that can be a draw too. So you can be conformed to that, you can give it a check mark, but be aware of that because everything in religion, whatever religion is, we can have confidence in the scriptures that we have that they are what was written on the written autographs.
Sometimes it can be a stumbling block. After we went to Europe and I saw all that, and one that's grounded in the truth, they see it as idolatry. I mean, big time, and not only false religion, but taking advantage of the poor, because of how they get that. Build that monument, and it can get in the way of talking to just your regular Catholic friends, say, because it's so many flags up. You just want to say, why not? It's nothing but idolatry. You're worshiping this and you're worshiping that, and you've got angels up there, and sometimes it's not on you, but it gets in the way of approaching correctly.
Again, it's hard to get past sometimes the longevity of religions, the longevity of buildings, longevity of the history. I mean, you can go into the history of the Catholic Church and they've got it lined up piece by piece, all the way back. And some way with other religions too. You ever seen any history religions that go back to the first century and it got the Church of Christ running through there? Okay. It's interesting trying to attach it to the past. And we can be careful sometimes, we think what we're doing. I'm not saying that's negative. I'm just saying it's just something that we try to emulate sometimes other religions. And it does give some confidence when you've got some longevity to a religion. But again, even with that, is it a man-made religion? Is it a religion that comes out of minds. It's an amalgamation of a lot of religions. And that's what we have to discern ourselves, because we can choose. And that's why God has preserved through the prophets this book that we have. And that should be our standard for all things. And it's in our language, and it's available to us. So it's one of those things we need to consider. Appreciate your comments. Thank you very much. So I just want to make that point about conformity, and have to keep our mind focused. Sometimes the word polluted is used. Now, and our next lesson is lesson number 3. And as I was looking here, confronting error and seeking the lost, I was thinking about a little blue book I've had for many years. It's a paperback. And it said, Let's Go Fishing for Men. And if you've been around for many years, you probably have that in your library. And I was looking that up last night. Mine is blue in the front. Got that inherited from Sandy's father, Andrew Dunbar. But apparently there was 8 different covers on it and that kind of thing. But the point is, by Homer Haley, back in 1951. And it had a lot of things dealing with fishers for men. It was important. It was part of the life. And I would imagine it was a book that was widely read. You may have it in your library. Okay? So it was one of those things that we need to be fishers for men. And when we think about those verses in Matthew 4:19, it's starts Jesus there, you know, right after the temptation. And in 4:18, and walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. In verse 19, Jesus says to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." Take him, and they immediately went with him. They saw a priority here. They saw Jesus. He spoke to them as one with authority. He spoke to them as one who would be a leader. Would be a leader. And let's go fishing for men, taking an instance and building it into, you know, orders, helpful, guidance. That's true leadership. So that's just something that we all need to consider when we start this lesson 3. Confronting error and seeking the lost. And with Jesus' instructions to them, it's the same strict instructions to us. Be fishers of men. Of course, these days you got to see fishers of people. Okay? Or whatever. All right? But it's the same idea. Same idea. So let's be those fishers of men. Okay? I'm not going to say hunting. I'm going to say fishing. All right? So let's remember that. Now, confronting error and seeking the lost. If we seek the lost, what are we doing? How are we approaching the lost? Is it confronting error? Well, there may not be any error there, except for I'm just here. Okay? But seeking the lost. And that's our mission. Because someone sought after us, didn't they? Even if it's our parents, they sought after us to conform to the Word. And thanksgiving to them for that. In my case, I was sought after. I attended. The reason didn't have anything to do with faith. But John Kilgore took the time. One on one. To deal with the book of Acts. And eventually, you know, that is true. That is the pattern. That is sound doctrine. And eventually you come and say, you know, this has got some worth to it.
And you know what? I've always, as all people, one way or another, think about eternity and think about goodness here. So I eventually formed to that will of God. And I must say this too. Parents have a big influence. You know, if you raise the idea to be fair to other people, to listen to other people, whether it's school as you grow up or in a workplace, those sorts of things reflect your character to be receptive and to be receptive to the Word. So don't underestimate your influence with the children around you, again, workplace and that sort of thing. So character means a lot of about influence.
Now, let's put that in. All right. Departure from the truth is warned and is to be expected. In 1 Corinthians 10:12, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. The backdrop on that being written was the Israelites in these verses preceding it and around it. That these Israelites, you know, they were brought out of Egypt, go to the promised land, saw the Red Sea, had manna provided for them, and they took it for granted because they murmured, didn't they? And then they started going back to idols back and forth. Remember the Ten Commandments, and they received those. Here they are, the promised people. So we've got to be careful that we're not overconfident or self-confident in our faith. That it's something to be renewed day by day. Again, as you approach world religions, remember that also. Let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. It's good saying to remember. Okay? Because it's true. In Hebrews 3:12, in these verses, again, dealing with the Hebrews, in 12, it deals with when we stop believing. What are we doing when we stop believing or have less believing? Then we're falling away, aren't we? So we need to be careful of that as we are thinking about our life, our devotion, and are we beginning to depart? Is it possible? So especially when we're diverted our time, that's only so much time. And we can be wrapped up in the internet, wrapped up in TV, wrapped up in personal affairs, wrapped up in business. But those sort of things can tug at us, so when we start to fall away, we stop believing. Okay? Down that road. And then verse 13, and it's the idea there is encourage. Encourage one another before time runs out. That's our responsibility, one to another and to ourselves. How can you encourage one another? Do you see some actions in another person? Do you see them? They used to be here all the time. And now what? They're kind of showing up less and less. When we call to see how one is doing, I sincerely call to see what's going on in their life and how they're doing. Is it a quick call? Quick answer? So that idea of encouraging one another. Because Satan wants our time. Satan wants our time. And he wants to divert us from that. And the last admonition in Hebrews 3:14 is hold fast and stay firm. Hold fast and stay firm. Again, good words to live by. And also they'll keep us from departing from the truth. How do you reinforce holding fast and staying firm? Read, examine, test. Those are the things we should be looking at. Okay? And that's what scriptures tell us to do. Now, that's personal warnings. Be careful of where we're at and what we're doing. Okay? In the next part there, self-made religion or man-made religion, self-abasement and worship of angels and visions and that sort of thing. Of course, all that's asceticism. Okay, where you have a severe self-discipline or avoidance of all forms of indulgence. That's asceticism. So that's what they're trying to do in those verses. And it was a problem in the first century. That's why Paul wrote about that to these believers, to be careful of that and getting entangled with that as a warning. And that's things we need to think about on that. And it says in verse 16, that no one pass judgment on you in questions of food, drink, or festivals, etc. And I'll just go ahead and do 18. Let no one defraud or disqualify you, insisting on asceticism and worship of angels. So someone tells you, oh, you don't worship angels. You should do this. And trying to belittle your faith or severely question your faith, which is okay. But belittle your thought, your faith, and your religion. So be aware that you don't get shamed by that or you cower down from that. Because you'll run into, in other religions, you'll run into people who do that for a living, trying to convert Christians to Islam. And you need to be aware of that in life. Okay? Don't cower down to that. Say, I don't know. I'll get back with you. I know in the past I've done Jehovah's Witnesses. They're really good. But you can deal with them, okay? And they have no problem at all. They have no meetings. And you just keep the volume down, deal with them louder, and you can deal with it. At least you get your points across. Okay. All right. So be aware of those things that you see in life. Now, and a lot of that went into, you remember, the don't taste, don't touch, don't handle, those sort of things. So there's, okay. And general apostasy is something to think about too when you're dealing with departing from the truth and being warned. That's the big word, warned about these things. General apostasy. Again, trying to strengthen us, especially in that 2 Thessalonians 2:2. Don't be shaken or deceived by false teaching. That the day of the Lord has come in AD 70 doctrine there. Years ago, it was still a big doctrine in AD 70 that Jesus had already come. But it shook some people's faith. I missed it. And the same thing was going on in the first century. And again, God has preserved those words for us to be warned about. When is the day of the Lord coming? I don't know. Soon? I don't know. You'll see premillennials and that sort of thing now. The day of the Lord's coming soon. You see a world event occur and it's coming. But your hope is on today. Your hope is how you react today with attitudes and your actions. So that's what we need to concentrate on this day. And let God take care of the judgment. Let God take care of the judgment. Okay. In Acts 20 and 29, you know, you can have some error and apostasy occurring in all places. And we know Acts 20 is where Paul was having a quote-unquote elders class in Ephesus. Of course, Ephesus is a town of much idolatry. And he's warning them, the members of the congregation, people, and warning the elders in that congregation that there can be error come. And guess what? It may come from the leadership or the examples that you look at. And so be aware of that as you go through life. And those sort of things are, it may sound good. I got here, you turn away from what is right and good to evil. You turn away from it. And so those are things, as we are thinkers, God gave us a mind to think about good and evil. And what is good and evil defined? It's defined in what Scripture says. So be aware of that. It comes from any source. Any source. All right? That's why you test. That's why you study. Okay. And always have good character with that. Any comments? Good. Good. Now, 1 Timothy 4, 1 through 3. Again, the idea of general apostasy. Talking to a preacher here, a young preacher. And if anybody is tested, if anybody's tested in this life, it's a young preacher. Because some congregations have a lot of turmoil in there, a lot of underlying currents. And you never know what you're going to be confronted with. And sometimes a young preacher wants to answer immediately on some of these questions. But let him be confident that the Word contains the answer. And again, Paul's warning Timothy here that there will be teachers out there. There will be people that confront you, and they'll be deceitful, and they'll be insincere, and they'll lie. And again, you'll have a lot of deceitful men. So you need to be aware, especially in that time where, I'm not going to say, in a sense, starting a new religion. In a sense, really fulfilling of an old religion. But it's really starting new, and there's a lot of confrontation. It's hard when you've done something, your family did it, and you did it, and you were a certain way of thinking to change. And that was what Timothy had to do. He had to do those sort of things that corrected their thoughts and changed their life and their customs. And for the good. When you listen to Timothy, which they should have, okay, his motives are always pure. His motives are always in concern, reflecting the love of Christ for the lost individual. And that was his duty as that young preacher. And with Paul to help him and guide him in these words, that's good. That's really good. Okay. The next part there. Let me say this too. I did a young preacher. What about an old preacher? An older preacher. Can they be deceived? Can they be deceitful? Can they think of themselves much higher than they should be? Can an older preacher in the confidence they can spell out and answer for everything? Can they lose love that Christ has for all of us? Sure, anyone can. Sure you can. And that's why we strengthen each other. As we're here today, and strengthen each other in our teaching. So that's a thing to think about. Okay. And I guess the next question there is when you have deception, false prophets, false teachers, and imposters. In 2 Peter 2:1, Peter's dealing with the idea that there are false teachers out there. That even to deny that Jesus came in the flesh. And there's sensuality involved. The Bible is slandered and blasphemed. Greed's involved. Okay? You know, when we hear evangelistic teachers on television, well, they just want your money. Well, that's true. That's true. So that you can get a bad reputation, can't you? Okay? And it's a shame they have such a wide audience. And they promise, these false teachers, they promise freedom from those restrictions they were putting on you. That sound doctrine is not really sound. And they're going to put you into slavery as a result. Slavery to them, slavery to the really ultimately Satan, and his false teaching. So, and how do you combat false teaching? Show me the book, chapter, and verse. Show me that. So, it's things to think about. So, you're going to be confronted with these as you seeking loss, which you already have, I'm sure, in your life. And in the next part there, it's like in Timothy 3:13, again, warning Timothy again. Evil people, imposters are there, but continue to learn and to firmly believe. So that's too simple, isn't it? To just continue to learn and believe. It is simple. God wouldn't make it complicated for us. He never has. Listen to my words. Work on my commandments. Have love for brethren and neighbor. Those sort of things will come out well in the end. And the last part there, the last question is, do you desire others to depart from the way of their religions, their world religions? Do you feel comfortable in changing someone and leading them to the way, the faith, the scriptures, away from those other scriptures they may have? Do you feel comfortable in that? What may result if you convert a Muslim or a Hindu? What could result? Persecution, ostracization. That's hard, but if you persevere through that, and you may have job loss, family split. It might have happened to your family already. I don't know. You may have to leave your old friends. You know, even when you're converted, you need to leave some old friends anyway. Especially if you were, a person of the world. You need to leave those. But you need to replace them with other friends. Other friends that have the same outlook that you have. The same understanding of who this Jesus of Nazarene was and is. And in the end, you'll be reinforced for that. You may have to move to another area. You know, if you're a Roman Catholic in New York, you may have to move to another area down south. But anyway, deal with that issue. You may have to change countries. Who knows? You know, sometimes the persecution, as Linda mentioned, is so hard that you just got to pick up and move. Will your family understand? In time, prayerfully. Because if you're sincere in what you're doing, okay, that should reflect, okay, on families. Of course, some families never get over it. Not to mention, it used to be, maybe today, you marry another faith. Oh no. Shouldn't do that. So, that is today, but it used to be in years past. And you catch world religions, you marry another faith, it's a big deal. Because in effect, you're leaving the family. You're saying, I hate my family. So it's really hard. But what's the goal? Introduce them to Christ so they can choose. So they can choose in the right manner. Again, you see your sincerity in that. Okay. Let's see. You desire others to depart. Do you? I hope so. Somebody, when they went to you, they wanted you to depart whatever you were in. Baptist, Methodist, Catholic, non-affiliated, wishy-washy, whatever it was. So someone took the time with you. Of course, you can be like Steve Rudd. He says he just studied out of it. Okay? And that's not to be diminished either. You see a question, you can study it. There's tons of literature.
you get to the point pretty fast. And these days, you know, you got the net that you can pick up a lot of things, and a lot of it good. And we compare things, don't we? When you shop at the store, you compare things? Sure you do. Okay.
So let's think about that. Now, what kind of religions or deities were the brethren exposed to, and were they jealous? And we can see in these four examples here that these believers in the first century, they were exposed to about everything. From outside their Jewish religion, from inside their Jewish religion. Because that's where their past was. Or from their idolatry. So they had all those functions and ideas and the religions going on now. In Acts, what were they exposed to? Well, in Acts 14, 11 through 13, Paul's dealing with a lame man who never walked from birth. And guess what? Paul said, "Get up." He leaped up. Well, today you need a lot of physical therapy, wouldn't you? Okay. And some days they get saved like that. Some of these healing meetings, and they're up for a second, then they're back down. But this was a true miracle, and they saw it. They saw it around Paul. And they said that God's among us. Well, in their background, they had idolatry. They had Greek gods. Whoa, God is among us. And I guess if I was that person there too, I'd say that too. A God's walking among us now. But here's Paul exposed and purposely in these areas that there was idols and Greek gods and many Greek gods. But he chose to be there. Okay? And he confronts them with that because he says, you know, I'm not Zeus. I'm not Hermes. They wanted to assign that to him. So they had religions around them. Okay? Not afraid to be in a religious area. Now, in Acts 19, 13 through 17, here's Paul healing and evil spirits believing. And what's interesting in this one, you take note that the Jews are also working on it. They have their exorcists. And if you look at exorcists, and there was a predominant group of guys, Jews, who claimed to be exorcists, that they could remove these evil spirits. I'm going to have a little piece here on that. That, you know, they would say the words. They would claim that Jesus. That's an interesting section to read it, if you please read that, 18:19, Acts 19. But they would say words, and they would say that by the power of Jehovah, the power of Jesus, by the power of, you know, Solomon, okay, or David. And they would claim to be those sort of exorcists. And I can't tell you what, that got your attention. Guess what it also did? Brought a lot of money to them, too. You want your kid exorcised? No. Yeah, we'll be there. We'll be there. And so, to see, between the years of 50 and 100 AD, there were numerous such exorcists, Jews in the Roman Empire, who went around looking for people to perform this magic on, so-called magic. They traveled wherever there was any prospect of gaining monetary advantage by these exorcisms. It was a regular thing for the Jews to be exorcists. They seem to be a special power in the use of the specially sacred divine name that only Jews would know. That was from Josephus. We've heard of him before. So that's some things that he knew about, and he wrote about it. So they were prominent in those days. And while admitting that a Jew might exorcise an evil spirit by the name of God, there's another writer named Justin. Complained that a class of Jewish exorcists used the same superstitions and magical aids, and I might add books here too, magical books, okay, that converted the heathen, that the heathens used. So, let's see, the Jews are using the same techniques that the heathens are using, to get these so-called spirits out of people. Well, then what makes it so special about Abraham's name or Jesus' name or these idols' names? No, it was a business. It was a business. If you say something over and over and over to somebody enough, they're going to change what they're thinking. So it's not the true exorcism. As a matter of fact, you look at these verses, the evil spirits are saying, "Who are you? Who are you?" Okay? You're not doing things in the name of Jesus. You're doing it for personal gain. And eventually, the idea that they started a riot and that sort of thing, and because they were losing money, because they weren't selling idols anymore. So there can be insincerity and deceit in this life. And again, they confronted that back then. They didn't shy away from it, and they went for it. Now, let's see, in Acts 19, 18 and 19, again, the books I mentioned. And what's interesting there, I was looking that up. You know, there was those books that they burnt there responding to Paul in the religion of that day. Okay? It says 50,000 pieces of silver. That was the value of those magic books that they had. And one piece of silver, 50,000, one piece of silver is a day's wages. That's a lot of funds. Their faith, their conversion, they're believing in Paul. They're believing in the Jesus that Paul talked about. And they change their lives by the demonstration of those miracles. I believe in Paul. So that's a great sacrifice, especially people who have money. They burn those books. It took a lot of those guys off the street, too. All right. Now, in the last verse, Acts 19, 24-28, Paul makes the comments here, these idols you have. And it got him in trouble. These idols you have are worthless. Worthless. They will do you no good. And again, they were upset with him. And let's see, because he was making princess, goddess Diana and that sort of thing. God made it with hands. God, idols, gods are not made with hands. Your God, certainly not. And you'll see. Okay. Any question on that?
No, just interesting. The Ephesians who became Christians, coming out of idolatry, their battle was not over because later in the letter that was written to them in the book of Revelation, that they had to test men who said they were apostles and found that they weren't. So there were more frauds that they continued had to deal with and expose the era of false religion.
And like Steve's saying, even later years, tens of years, okay, it's still there. These false teachers are still there, claim to be apostles. And no doubt probably claim to have power too. That's why sound doctrine and warning are all throughout the scripture. So we need to consider them in this life, okay, and again when we deal with other religions. And again, strengthening our own. So we'll start with number three next time. Appreciate your time. Really did. Thank you very much. Oh, I've got some little errors on my when we start number four in my charts on the Bibles and that sort of thing. So I left out more than a few books. So I'm going to bring you some revised pages on those. Thank you very much.